On this episode of Still Loading, we're continuing Mario Month. Hey guys, it's Josh, and welcome back to this new episode of Still Loading. As you may have heard from last time, or for those who listened to the last episode, Casey is still here.
It's always a pleasure.
Thank you for coming, Casey.
Of course, anytime.
And so, also, for those who didn't listen to the last episode, this entire month of July is Mario Month for Still Loading, and we are going to be covering the original Super Mario Brothers games. And, I didn't say it last episode, but maybe something extra. In any case, to move on with that, we are going to be covering Super Mario Bros. 2, the U.S. version. And that's a big distinction.
Mm-hmm.
So, Casey, when did you first play Super Mario Bros. 2?
So, when I was a kid, my mom, she actually ordered Super Mario All-Stars from a catalog. And I remember coming home from preschool one day, and it came in the mail, and I remember getting the game and immediately playing that game all freaking day.
Mario 2 specifically? That was the first one you tried, or did you do some
That day,
specifically Mario All-Stars.
Exactly. All day. Okay. Yeah, so that was my first experience with Super Mario Bros. 2.
Now you brought Super Mario All-Stars for us to play after a recording session. Mm-hmm. Is that the original cart that you had as a kid?
Unfortunately, it's not. I was kid and traded in everything, and then I bought all my stuff back, so.
Buying back the childhood.
Yeah.
All right, so we did this with the first Super Mario Brothers, and we're going to do this again with Super Mario Brothers 2. We're going to go into a little bit of a history lesson. Now, for those who don't know, this is actually more common video game history, but maybe it isn't for all you guys. Like, I don't know, Casey and I are both big into video game history, so we came across this, and I don't know, I find it interesting. So, in any case, the U.S. version of Super Mario Bros. 2 is not the original Super Mario Bros. 2. Originally, after Super Mario Bros. Came out in Japan, obviously it was a huge hit, just like it was here in the U.S., and Nintendo wanted a sequel quickly. And in fact, Super Mario Bros. 2 did get released less than a year after the original Super Mario Bros. In fact, Nintendo R&D 4, that was the team that made it. That's the one with Miyamoto on it. They completed the game in less than 4 months. Or about 4 months. And they released it in Japan on the Famicom Disk System. And some of you guys may remember me talking about that in previous episodes, but the disk system was literally like a floppy disk add-on for the NES, or the Japanese version of the NES. And honestly, I kind of want one, but I have to get the Famicom, and then I have to get the Famicom disk system, and it's a little pricey, but I'm kind of willing to pull the trigger on it at some point. I think that would be an awesome piece to add to my collection.
Absolutely. It's one of those things, too, where it's like, at the time, you might be like, oh, do I really need something like this? And then right when you get it, it's like, I have no regrets.
I really want one.
Yeah.
And what was cool about the disk system is that since it was floppy disks, they were rewritable. You could actually save your game, unlike on the NES. And I believe I actually covered this probably on when I covered Nintendo R&D 3, I think was an episode I did on kind of like a video game history episode. And, you know, later on they added the save feature to the battery packs, the save feature by adding batteries to the NES cartridges, for like Zelda. And that's how they kind of combated it for some of the more complicated games. So the original Super Mario Bros. 2 was released on the Famicom Disk System, and it was outrageously difficult. In fact, it is considered one of the most difficult games on the NES. And that's saying something, considering how many hard games are already on the NES.
And that, I can definitely attest to that. It's easily one of the hardest Mario games. I actually had a chance to beat it, including the bonus worlds, only on the All-Star version. The NES version, forget about it, because the All-Star version was a little bit more forgiving, which was on the All-Star, the Lost Levels.
Well, we also didn't get the NES version of that game originally.
Correct, right. I was just saying, you know, now that we do have it today, I mean, we'll
technically
get to
we
that.
Can get ROMs and
right.
stuff.
Right, we'll get to that point. But that was more forgiving in the sense that, you know, when you died on, let's just say, I don't know, World 7-2, you will restart at World 7-2 rather than going either back to World 1, or if you, you know, hold down the A button and select, you go to 7-1.
Yeah. So
there was a little bit more leeway, but I put that on a resume, and that's how I got my current job.
Are you serious?
No.
Oh, my God. Come on. That would be fucking awesome.
I know, yeah.
But no, so Super Mario Bros. 2 originally was never released in the U.S. Back to, at least in 86 when the game was supposed to come out. And so when it came over to the U.S. to kind of, you know, to Nintendo of America kind of see, would this be a viable game in America? I mean, Super Mario Bros. 1 was popular, but would 2? Well, at the time, there was a guy named Howard Lincoln who worked at Nintendo, and he kind of was like their, essentially like their sole QA tester for a little while. He was really the guy who could pick what, who was good at picking what sold well in the U.S. and what did it, would not sell well in the U.S. And he hated the game. He thought it was unnecessarily difficult. He didn't enjoy it at all. Additionally, it was a Famicom Disk System game. So if he would have wanted it, a game that was already difficult, they would have had to, you know, transfer it over to a cart, which would have cost money. Additionally, it's hard to believe now, but back then, the U.S. game market was just coming back. I mean, it had crashed in 83, and it was pretty much a death sentence to release a video game, to be a video game developer in the early 80s because no one wanted them. Mm-hmm. And so with the NES becoming big in the U.S., it was just starting to get its feet back under, like its feet again, if that makes sense. It's putting its legs back under it. And so releasing a relentlessly difficult game, a sequel to the most popular game on the system, would have been a really bad idea, or it could have been a bad idea, and I think it would have.
Yeah, I agree. You know, and it's kind of like what you said, you know, you just come off of this game that is incredibly popular. It got, you know, such rave reviews. It was one of the things that helped pull the video game
market
from the crash, you know, other than Rob the Robot. And and to do something like Robbie. This would have been, yeah, to do something like that would have just, at the time, it would have been good.
No,
too soon.
I agree. And so they sent it back, I think Minoru Arakawa, was the president of Nintendo America at the time. He was actually the stepson of the president of Nintendo, mm-hmm. Hiroshi Yamauchi. He was the stepson, I believe. And he basically sent it back saying, could we get a different sequel tomorrow? This will not sell well here. So around that time, There was a media TV station. I'm blanking on the name. I think it was called Dream Factory was the name of the company. And they were having a big celebration of, like, manga and TV shows and music. And they were having a big, like, blowout thing. It's weird to think of because we don't really have a lot of companies like that. I guess the closest thing that we would have, like, we can compare it to this type of thing as a convention.
Right.
But specifically for one company. So, like, BlizzCon or QuakeCon or something like that. This was all devoted to one company's products, and so they wanted to partner with Nintendo because the Famicom was huge in Japan. In fact, from what I remember, every one out of four households had a Famicom in Japan at that time, so it was super popular. So they wanted to develop a game for it. It was called Dream Factory Doki Doki, or maybe not Dream Factory, but it was called Doki Doki Panic. And it was based off the four characters that were kind of like the mascots of the company Dream Factory. And the game was developed by Nintendo R&D4, the same team that made the original Super Mario Brothers. It was made by Shigeru Miyamoto, once again, original Super Mario Brothers. Though at the time he was a little like he just become a father and he pretty much had to his he was working on another game, The Legend of Zelda, so his attention was devoted elsewhere. So eventual Nintendo superstar Takashi Tezuka, who you guys would all remember, well, I wouldn't say remember, but would know from Super Mario World. He was the director of Super Mario World. Miyamoto turned into pretty much a producing role. Tezuka became the director, and Koji Kondo came back to do the soundtrack or do the music for the game. So you pretty much have the Nintendo all-stars of the time working on this game, and pretty much all the ones who worked on the original Super Mario Brothers. In fact, Takashi Tezuka, even though he wasn't a director on the original Super Mario, he was one of the people who worked on it. I don't remember if he was a level designer or not, but he worked on the game. And so they developed this game called Doki Doki Panic, and it had the four different characters from Dream Factory. Well, at the time, since they couldn't come up with a full new game, and they didn't want to wait the amount of time it would take to develop a new game, they thought, what if we just took an existing game and swapped out the sprites with what was there for Mario sprites? And they sent back to America Doki Doki Panic and said, would the children of America like this game if we swapped out these character sprites with sprites of Mario, Luigi, Peach, and Toad? And the Nintendo of America said yes. And this game is where this is what became the American version, of Super Mario Brothers 2.
Right.
And this is a, even though it's very different, it's a really good game.
Mm-hmm.
And we were playing this last week. So a lot of games, we didn't say this in the last episode, but to kind of prep for this episode, we actually went on the task of trying to beat all of the original Super Mario Brothers. We only beat three, but we only beat the third one. But we did get to the final boss of Super Mario 1, and we got a couple levels into Super Mario 2.
Right.
Let's talk about the game, and there's a little bit more that I want to talk about in terms of like the history of it, but actually, no, I think that in terms of history, we covered everything. But there is stuff later on I want to talk about, like its legacy, essentially. But let's talk about the game itself. So what's interesting is that it does a lot more vertical scrolling than just horizontal scrolling. Now, Casey, you went from playing, like I said, you're my resident Mario expert. What stood out as the biggest difference for you when you were playing it?
It's kind of hard to explain. When you first play a game like this, after, you know, playing the first one for the first time, one of the things is it changes the mechanics a little bit. You know, you can no longer jump on enemies and kill them. You have to figure out that once you jump on them, you have to press the B button in order to pick them up and throw them at other people, or the other enemies to kill them. In order to get a power-up, you have to collect... you have to find the warp door, and then to go through the warp door, depending on where you are, you'll see a mushroom there that'll add an extra life. You kill a certain amount of enemies, a heart will come up to replenish your health. To get the invincibility star, you have to collect 5 cherries. So it's different. No more coin blocks mm-hmm. anymore. So.
There are still coins, though.
Yes.
Interestingly enough, some of the items in the game were kind of... they kind of stole, I shouldn't say stole, but borrowed from Mario. There's an invincibility star, just like Mario. There are still coins, just like Mario.
Right.
What was the other one? There was something else that was kind of similar-ish to Mario, but wasn't quite the same. I can't remember now, all of a sudden. the power stars, and then you also, there's still coins and stuff like that. And I would say the spirit of secrets. There's a lot of secrets in that
game. Yes, you can warp in this game as well.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
Did we find
the warp? We did not. Oh, okay. Yeah, they're in goofy places, I can show you.
All right. But no, so... sorry, I cut you off. You're saying things you noticed, like you said, like the mechanics are completely different.
Yeah, I mean, the general sense is still there, you know, get from point A to point B. However, instead of beating the boss in, you know, the goal in the first Mario game is, you know, to get to the final round, the final world in each level, and then just beat Bowser. And by beating Bowser, you can either, you know, if you have the Fire Flower, you just shoot fireballs at him, or you have to avoid him and get the axe to break the bridge open. Where in this game, you actually have to throw projectiles at your enemy. A lot of times you'll be coming up, you'll be encountering Birdo, one of the enemies there.
And I would say that that's something that's really different. Like, in Mario, there was only really one boss at the end of each world.
Right.
There wasn't bosses at the end of every stage. In Mario 2, there's a boss at the end of almost every stage, and
exactly.
It's usually Birdo, except for the boss at the end of that world is usually someone a little different, like Mouser or something like
right.
that.
Right. So I did like that approach to it. It made things a little bit more challenging in that sense. You know, you didn't know what to expect if you were played for the mm-hmm. first time. It's like, okay, well, who am I going to fight now? Well, I have enough health in order to beat this guy. You know, what strategy do I need to use in order to order to defeat him.
It really kind of made you start thinking, like, with the original Mario, you could pretty much, you just had to notice the pattern of it, because Bowser would just throw hammers or axes or whatever. Mm-hmm. In this one, it was not only just recognizing a pattern, but it was also figuring out the puzzle of the boss. So the boss itself was a puzzle, not just some type of, like, twitch reflex skill. It was also, like, how do you actually beat this guy?
Yep.
And what's really cool about the gameplay also is the individual characters. You can play as Mario, Peach, Luigi, or Toad, and each one of them has different abilities. So, like, Mario is your most, is like your best well-rounded character. He can jump well, he can move well, he controls well, in general he's got decent power. Peach and Luigi have lower power, but Luigi can jump the highest out of the four of them, and Peach can float. Which is really cool. And what's interesting, and then, sorry, last one, Toad can't jump or move well, but he's a lot stronger.
Right.
And what's interesting is that these are the same characteristics that the original Japanese version, the Doki Doki Panic version, had. So they didn't really change that much. They just literally swapped out a sprite. And it still boggles my mind that all they really did was sprite swap it. There are some other differences, but the main thing is the sprite swap. And the game still feels like a Mario game, which is crazy.
Right, and I think that there are a little bit of differences in terms of the music, too. I think that Doki Doki is a little bit faster.
Okay.
I have to go back and listen, but I think the pitch is a little bit higher, too. But
Well, that would make sense, because Doki Doki Panic was on the Famicom Disk System, and I believe I mentioned in the last episode how the NES only had about 4 sound channels.
Yeah.
One for the sound, and generally, one for sound effects, and 3 for music. The Famicom Disk System added more. I think it was only 1, but I honestly don't remember off the top of my head. But the Disk System added more sound channels, so because of that, you generally could make have like a richer, fuller sound on Disk System games than you could on the cartridges. So when they brought it over here, they kind of had to rearrange the music pieces, on each level to kind of fit with the sound channels on the NES. But anyway, so we were talking about the game mechanics and how it was, you know, it was different. Like you said, you had to jump on top of enemies to pick up, like, to either pick them up, or I always thought it was interesting how Birdo worked, where he would shoot eggs at you, he or she would shoot eggs at you, and you would have to jump to dodge them, land on the egg, hit the B button to pick up the egg while it was still moving with you on it.
Yep.
And do that. And actually, you know what? Let's talk about that mechanic of standing on enemies. Because they did a lot of interesting design choices with that. Like, there's some levels where you have to literally ride an enemy in certain points because you'll die otherwise. I remember seeing, I remember watching gameplay footage of, like, there's a floor of spikes and you actually have to literally stand on top of an enemy and have the enemy AI to walk you to where you need to go.
Yep. It is pretty cool that way. You have to be very innovative in how to get from point A to point B. So there are some really neat changes to the game. I know a lot of people, didn't really care for it, but I'm kind of like, it's kind of like a toss-up. One day I'll like Mario 1 better than Mario 2, and then for the most part I like Mario 2 better than 1. But it's hard to choose. But I think overall I might like the second one more.
Oh, well, what's cool, too, is that even though the game itself was originally nothing like a Mario game, it was actually designed with a Mario spirit in mind, which shows, because a lot of these enemies that were on there stayed in Mario games. Shy Guys, you still see them in Mario games today, and they were not an original, like, Mario idea.
Yep.
So things like, and there's other, like, Shy Guys, Birdo, enemies like that, like they were not original Mario game or enemy ideas, but they're still around today.
Agreed. And just going back to the whole visualization regarding that, when you were talking about the palette swapping, even when they did minor details, like not only did they just
sprite swapping.
Like with the fighter who was in Doki Doki Panic and like Luigi, Luigi dangles his feet when he jumps. The other one didn't. So it's kind of cool.
Tiny, so they actually added some extra things. They didn't have to do that. Right. That was just really cool. Yeah. Something minor to add.
And it's funny, too, because even something that tiny, a lot of people will recognize, you know, Luigi's unique jump even to this day. You know, if you play the Super Mario Advance 2 version of Super Mario World for the Game Boy Advance, Luigi does that jump. When you play Super Smash Bros. Brawl and Up, Luigi does that jump. So it's pretty cool how they, you know, continued with that.
And it's really interesting. So, I mean, the music for this game was pretty cool. Before we move on, because, like, what I wanted to say, what was leading me into was talking about the legacy, and I kind of want to save that to the end, but to kind of, like, before we get to that, because there's a lot of stuff about this game that I want to talk about in regards to how it changed the Mario franchise. I don't know so much about the whole gaming landscape as, you know, in whole, I guess I use that word twice, whole. But I don't know how much it changed game design as a whole, but it definitely had some really good effects on the Mario series for the future. So I definitely want to talk about that as we get closer to the end of the episode. But the one thing that I would say to kind of move on with this is the graphics. The graphics, I think, are some of the best on the original NES. It's not the best. Like, I do think Super Mario Bros. 3 overall is graphically superior, but I do really like the NES's. I do really like Super Mario Bros. 2 I cannot speak today. Super Mario Bros. 2's graphics. That's like a tongue twister right there. I like how the sprites look, and what's interesting, if you notice it, the outline of the sprites are, they have a soft outline. Like, it's not a harsh black border, it's like light colors, it's like almost like a weird pastel red.
It's
on
very
some of it.
It's very smooth, and it's something that they didn't do so much in the first Mario Brothers game. And the first one was great, just how vibrant and bright it was, and this one just took that and made it, like, even better, even with just a few tweaks, which is, you know, like you said, it's one of the better looking NES games.
And what's, and there's a reason they actually even, that was actually, sorry, excuse me, that was actually another one of the reasons why they decided to not bring it over to the US, because The Lost Levels was literally a carbon, practically looked like a carbon copy of the original Super Mario Brothers in terms of graphics.
Basically a template. That's all it was.
It was the exact same thing. Yeah. They added some new things, like in The Lost, we'll be talking about The Lost Levels. I mean, I guess to kind of spoil what we were going to talk about later on, Super Mario Brothers 2 that was not released in the U.S., the Japanese version, the real Super Mario Brothers 2, later came to the U.S. in Super Mario All-Stars, which we were talking about before, as The Lost Levels. And they added some new enemy, some new elements to that, like the poison mushrooms that would actually hurt you, I guess, and even kill you. I don't know, do you know, did the poison mushrooms kill you completely, or do they just, like, if you were big Mario, did it shrink you back down to small Mario?
I am, like, 95% sure, because it's been a while, that it'll just shrink you, but if you're small, it'll kill you.
It'll small, yeah. That would make sense. But no, so like, the real Super Mario Bros. 2 just added a couple extra things and made the game relentlessly difficult. While this one, the graphics were a considerable upgrade, because it wasn't just the original Mario Brothers adjacent. It was a completely new experience. It was new graphics, new sprites for Mario, Luigi, Peach, and Toad. And I would say it's really colorful. Like, I love the green hills on the first level. I love how, like, it's not just one shade of green. They have two different shades. Like, it alternates between, like, a light and dark green. I like how all the little, like, it's interesting because, like you said, there's no more jumping on enemies. You pick things up. So you'll see these little red grass wisps on the ground, and you have to pick those up to see the, like, the turnips or whatever that you can throw at enemies. It's a very colorful game, and the first Mario game was super colorful, and I feel like this one kind of emphasized that even more. Every time I look at this game, in a weird way, it just makes me happy. Like, it's a really nice looking game.
It is a happy game. And the music goes along well with it, too. It kind of sets the tone of, you know, where you are in the game. You know, I love the boss music. It's different. It's fast paced. It's like, okay, I'm right here. I need to beat this guy. But at the same time, this music is a bit unsettling.
Well, and I like that the bosses we were talking about before are more puzzle-ish. Like, it wasn't just watching a pattern. I like watching speedruns of this game and seeing people beat Wart. He's the final boss, right?
Yeah.
Wart, like the big frog guy. I like watching that fight because I remember, like, the first time I saw someone actually beat the game, because I still haven't beaten it myself, I just liked how the final boss looked. I will say, though, storyline's a little bullshit, because Mario just wakes up.
Oh, yeah, it's a cop-out.
Spoiler alert. Yeah. You know, 30 years too late, spoiler alert. that's actually because the original Doki Doki Panic game, it was pretty much that. It was about two kids get trapped inside this book, and the four heroes of Dream Factory or whatever have to go rescue them. In this instance, you don't see that opening cutscene, and you just see Mario waking up, and you're like, oh, is it just a dream, or whatever.
Right. Well, actually, if I'm not mistaken, it has been a while, but I think in the very
beginning... It's been a while?
Yeah. Nah, that stuck in my head. And again, I could be wrong, because it's been a while since I actually read the intro, because, you know, right when I turned the game on, I just, you know, you like right what we did, we just it. Go right into it. But it might... Oh, you know what? Maybe it doesn't. All right, never mind. Just disregard everything I'm saying.
Class act there,
yeah,
Casey.
Yeah, my bad.
But no, before we kind of go on to the legacy of it, is there anything else you wanted to add about the gameplay, about the music, or anything like that? Graphics?
No, you know, like I may have said prior, we pretty much touched upon pretty much all of the good stuff. They, you know, took the basic concepts from the first one in terms of the graphics and the music and just made it unique. You know, it's still a happy Mario tune. And even in the newer Mario titles, where if you were to hear songs similar to that, like, you can tell that it's
still Mario.
Yeah, exactly.
And that leads me to the legacy thing I wanted to talk about. The importance of this game in the Mario series cannot be understated, because this game was weird. Let's just face it. I mean, the original Super Mario Brothers is weird, too. It's about a plumber eating mushrooms, fighting a dragon in a mushroom kingdom. Like, it's weird if you think of it at that level. But what's weird about this game in comparison to that is that it's so different.
Mm-hmm.
But yet it still feels Mario. That's very important to remember. In fact, I think that while Super Mario Brothers 2 in the U.S. is not technically the real Super Mario Brothers 2, it's not the real Super Mario Brothers 2, I'd argue it's more important because it showed Nintendo that you can take your franchises in weird directions as long as the core is still relatively there. I would say this divulged a little far from the core, but it still felt like Mario. I mean, I would even say you could make the argument. I don't know if I have enough like correlations for it, but you could make the argument if Mario 2 never existed, you wouldn't get the Mario spin-off games we have now. Because, like, for example, Mario Kart, Mario Tennis, that's not Mario. It's a Mario game, but it's not a classic Mario game, right? So Mario 2 is not a classic Mario game if you really think about it. It doesn't have all the same mechanics that the original Super Mario Brothers or Super Mario Brothers 3 had. It had completely different ones, but it still felt like Mario. And so since it did so well, I'd argue that it gave Nintendo courage to be like, well, let's try other things with Mario. What else can we put Mario in and have it be successful?
Agreed. And that's the cool thing, too, is that they did take a risk doing this, because the first one was so successful. This one might have bombed because it was so different,
mm-hmm.
but it is one of the top-selling NES games to this day.
And it's still one of the most beloved NES games
absolutely,
to
yeah.
this day. People still look back on this and look at it fondly. I mean, and like I said, they had it influenced future parts of the game, or future games, excuse me. Shy Guys are now a thing. And one thing I didn't bring up before, but I wanted to, was the mechanics of the individual characters. Luigi is still known for jumping higher than everyone else. Mario is still known for being that all-around decent character. Peach still known, like, look at Smash Brothers for crying out loud. Luigi jumps higher than Mario. Peach floats. I don't think you can play as Toad in Smash, but like, if you look at, like, Super Mario 3D World, right,
mm-hmm.
Toad runs faster than everyone else. So, while that wasn't the power move, quote-unquote, that was in Super Mario Brothers 2. Wait, did Toad move faster in Super Mario 2? Was it power?
The Japanese he was quicker.
Okay, so maybe quicker. So I was wrong. I think the Japanese version of Toad was power, it wasn't speed. So the when it went to the US, they changed Toad from being a power type of thing, like the same thing as the right. Japanese version.
And
to
then when
just...
he squats and jumps, it is higher in that sense. But okay. Yeah, so those are his two follow power ups. But I just wanted to follow up on the when you were talking about Luigi being the higher jumper, even in the Mario games today. They actually did include that in the original Super Mario Brothers too.
Did they?
Yeah, he was a definitely was a
Oh yeah, sorry. So you're talking about the original Super Mario Brothers 2, not the right, original Super Mario Brothers as well.
right.
Too many letters.
Yeah, sorry. So in the original Super Mario Brothers 2 that was not released here, Luigi was Yeah, he was he was a little bit more floatier, so to speak.
He could jump higher.
Yeah, he could jump higher. A little bit harder to control, but he was very beneficial with some of the levels, and I exploited the hell out of him in the lost levels. I don't know if I could have beaten it without him. That being said, they still took the same formula in the one that was released here, but they just changed it a little bit. He could still jump higher, but, you know, to a different extent, which is pretty cool.
So yeah, those characteristics that they designed for the characters have pretty much lived on through the rest of the Mario games. I mean, with some iterations here and there, but like that's what they are known for to this day. And that's why I was saying before, the legacy of this game, in terms of a design standpoint, I don't know how much it did. I mean, it was cool because it did horizontal and vertical scrolling, yeah. Which was different than what we were used to. Kind of like what Metroid did, where they had horizontal and vertical scrolling. And but in terms of what it did for Mario, it like I said before, it cannot be understated because it taught Nintendo that you can be weird and you can do different things with your IPs that you probably wouldn't have thought of. You can even make the argument maybe Smash Brothers might not have existed. Let's be real, it probably would have happened at some point, but but maybe not as quick as it did. Like. I mean, shortly thereafter, I mean, there wasn't necessarily Mario Kart right off the bat. I mean, there was on the Super Nintendo, but, like, look at, like, Tetris on the Game Boy. Mario's on Tetris on the Game Boy. So even though he doesn't do anything in terms of gameplay, they stuck him there, and it gave them the courage to do things like that where let's stick Mario in different places. It doesn't have to be in just his specific game type. We can do different things with him. So I think that was really important. I think that was something that really gave them a lot of courage. I can't say for certain because I don't have any quotes on that or anything.
Right.
This is more speculation, but I would say so.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that also helped, but... I mean, I don't want to be that guy, but I did want to point out that in Mike Tyson's Punch-Out, a year before, they did make him as the referee
to
do something like that.
That is true.
But, you know, you got me thinking, ever since Mario Brothers 2, they definitely added him in more games that, you know, you wouldn't normally see him in. And going back to you saying we may have not have had a Mario Kart, or if so, might have not have been so soon.
Yeah, it probably would have happened. You don't really know what would have happened.
Yeah, it's like, could have, you know, what if? But it also would have been the same thing with other games, too. You know, having Mario out of his element. You know, you have these cool games like Mario Tennis, Mario Golf. You know, just using the Super Mario Brothers 2 characters...
In those games,
like, play a board game like Mario Party. It gave Nintendo the incentive to, you know, divulge and do different things and became so successful.
Maybe it even... I mean, this is more far-reaching, but, like, maybe it even gave other Nintendo IPs, like, not free will, but, like, a little bit of courage to do that. Because, like, look at Donkey Kong. Now, granted, the one I'm thinking of is Diddy Kong Racing for the N64, but that was developed by Rare. So it's not like that wasn't... Now, Nintendo licensed Donkey Kong to them to do that. But still, it wasn't necessarily a direct Nintendo thing. But they still have to give the okay on it. So I wonder if things like that... I mean, that's why Donkey Kong has been added to Mario Kart and to Mario Tennis. I think he's in Mario Tennis, right?
Yeah.
He is. I don't really play a lot of Mario Tennis. even though I love it when I do. I really should play that more often. But yeah, so no. The legacy of the game is just... It's huge. It really did a lot for Nintendo, and it kind of helped keep that Mario fervor going strong in America in the late 80s. And what's weird to think about, though, not that much long after the release of Super Mario Bros. 2, Super Mario 3 was released in the U.S. It took so long to get Super Mario Bros. 2 over to the U.S. It was apparently only like a little over a year or something like that. It really wasn't that long of a wait for people, or for kids at least.
Right, yeah, so I know Mario Bros. 2, our version, was released in 88, and then
Mario Bros. 3 was released in 89. I want to say.
I think it was 90.
No, 90, you're right, because yeah. The Wizard came out in 89. Right,
and that was basically a long commercial for the game, but I mean, it was fun.
But yeah, so that's about all I had on the game. Did you have any final thoughts on Super Mario Bros. 2, Casey?
Yeah, it's, like I said, it's different. It's still very, very fun. I mean, if you haven't played the game before, it's definitely worth playing. It's still considered a beloved Mario title, even though it's different from its predecessor. Japan actually did get their own version of this game with the Mario sprites called Super Mario USA, which, by the way, if you watch the commercial for it on YouTube, it is the most bizarre Mario commercial I've seen. Yeah, I'll just leave it at that. But check it out. It's a fun game if you haven't played it already. And, you know, like I said, it's a toss-up. One day I'll like one better than two, two better than one. So it's fun.
And they're both very different games, yeah. So you really get the pick of the litter with it, really. Like, you get a lot of different options out of it. All right, so that wraps up this episode of Still Loading. Thank you all for listening. We will be continuing this Mario Month with guess what's happening next week. I bet you can't figure it out. Doesn't have anything to do with a 3 or anything like that. But you'll see what's happening next week. but no, so thank you all once again for listening. Some shout outs before we get going. Once again, shout out to the Apex in the Abyss, my original podcasting partner in crime. I shouted her out in the last episode. Erica is the host of the Apex in the Abyss, and it's an amazing true crime podcast. I definitely suggest giving that a listen. Two Guys in a Game and The Hotter Show, two of my biggest supporters, and I of theirs. Two Guys in a Game is an awesome gaming podcast. It's about two guys, and, well, not always a game. They talk about other kind of topics. It is my lifelong goal, though, to convince Kaz, the one of the co-hosts, that the Nintendo Labo is not a bad idea. But I don't think it's ever going. I don't think he's ever going to agree with me. But I'll do it one day. No, that shows that podcast is amazing. Also, The Hotter Show is amazing. Definitely check out No Geeks Allowed. That's KNOW, No Geeks Allowed. At the time of this recording, I have not heard their newest episode. As if you guys were listening to the last episode, they talked about E3 and their ideas for the N64 Mini. So I haven't heard anything since then. That was my most recent episode. But go give those guys a listen. They are funny. Definitely check out their show. And speaking of funny, check out the other podcast, Drinks with Larry. Those are a bunch of comedians. They're really funny. They promote a lot of shows in Ohio. So if you guys live in the Ohio area, go listen to their show so you can check out where some good comedy shows are at. And Christian and Damon's Amazing Nerd Show. They're really good, and same with 4205 Cast. I don't think I mentioned them last time. But yeah, so that wraps up all my shout-outs, and you can follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, at StillLoadingPod on all of them. Please, if you want to, reach out to me on StillLoadingContact@gmail.com. As always, remember to rate, review, and to subscribe to the show on iTunes. It helps get the show out there. Or just rate, review, and subscribe anywhere you listen to podcasts. If it gives you an option, please do so. It helps get the name out. Casey, now that I did my whole spiel, do you have anything you would like to plug?
Sure. You can feel free to follow me on Instagram. I am under Kazuya Kane. That's KazuyaKan as in November E. I basically just post video game related stuff, retro, current, my collection of video games, memorabilia, all sorts of stuff. So that's what you're into. Come check me out.
And that will wrap up this episode of Still Loading. So thank you all for listening once again, and we will both see you all next time.